Hey everybody, a quick note before we begin. This is an explicit podcast. While we do feel like most of our content's going to be acceptable for younger listeners, just be advised that a few curse words may slip in here or there. You might also notice our quality isn't the best. We're trying to get it up there. If you want to help support us through Patreon, that'll help us immensely in getting more equipment, better equipment to get you better content. Otherwise, just leave us feedback. It is thecomicwonk@gmail.com if you want to leave us a note. Thank you so much. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Comic Wonk Podcast, our weekly exploration of comics as a storytelling medium, as an art form, and as an industry. I'm your host. I'm Philip Champion. Who do I have with me here?
I'm Justin Horn.
So to give you an idea of what to expect here on the show, first we're going to go over kind of an introduction of who we are. Naturally, as our first episode, you're going to want an idea of our backgrounds, how we've interacted with comics in the past. Then we'll kind of tie that into our mission for the podcast in general. You know, what it is we want to get done, get through to you, the listener, and accomplish ourselves, how we might want to enrich ourselves through the process. Finally, we're going to sum up this last episode with kind of a breakdown. You'll understand in this little introduction here that I'm definitely, out of the two of us, the one a bit more passionate about comics, a lot more interaction with the medium before. So that breakdown is going to be really an introduction of Justin's interests and what it is he's enjoyed in different fiction and non-fictional work in the past, to kind of lay a roadmap for what it is I might recommend to him in comics. But let's go ahead and go into our first section here, kind of an introduction of who we are. Like I said, I'm Phil. I'm the person who's definitely more into reading comics, even if I don't necessarily line up with what folks might think of as someone who's picking up monthly comics from Marvel or DC. I tend to go in, instead of every week, to a comic shop once a month and a half, and pick up my smaller list of more independent, they call them, publishers, even though they're clearly, in a lot of cases, not independent in the way that we might think in a lot of other art forms. But from a young age, I loved comic strips. I actually have vivid memories of cutting out Garfields and Zits and all these different daily strips, and even the Sundays. I would collect them. I'd gather them in binders, in little folders. I would have my little squirreled away packet of comic strips. And I, through the years, Calvin and Hobbes has stuck with me as not just one of the best comic strips of all time, but one of the best comics of all time. Made a very big impression on my youth. And from there, like, I did dabble with superhero comics in middle school, but it was really, I was looking for a gift for my older brother, Larry, and I was looking at reviews for, there was a crossover between Star Trek Next Generation and Green Lantern, and I was just looking up reviews to see if it was good, if it would be a good gift for him for a Christmas one year. And there were all these reviews for this book when I was looking through the months called Saga. And everyone was saying this Image book, this Saga book, is so damn good. It was only like 7 issues in at that point. So I just so happened to be calling around to these comic shops looking for both this Green Lantern and Star Trek crossover. And hey, do you guys have anything related to that Saga book? Do you have the Saga issue number 1 by chance? Because I'm just thinking I want to catch it in on an early point if I'm only 7 issues in or whatever. Little do I know, it's one of the hottest books on the market. It's going for like $150 on eBay for that issue 1. And, you know, like, there's no way I'm going to land that thing without, like, I'm some naive guy who's like, hey, do you have this thing? I've been hearing about this Saga thing. And they're like, yeah, no, buddy.
No one has this.
Except for one of the shops that I called was Legend Comics and Coffee. They're actually an Eisner Award-winning comic shop. They've won what's essentially the comics industry equivalent of an Oscar for their service in the industry. When I called them, they straight up told me, oh no, you're going to have a hard time finding number 1. We have a reprint that have Image does a $1 reprint of number 1. You can come in, grab that, and we have, I think, the rest of these, at least in second or third printings, if you want to catch up. Like, completely everything that you would need to hear if you're someone who knows nothing. doesn't know where to start. Mm-hmm. Like, I just so happened to have a shop that would be able to nurture mm-hmm. that need mm-hmm. for the resources and the knowledge. So that kind of brings you up to date. Now, Saga is only 7 years old at this point, something like that. Probably older, 10 years old. Because time keeps on slipping, and I'm pretty sure we're all aging and going to die someday. So it's probably more like a decade old at this point. So that's the amount of time that I've really been back into comics. But what about you? What's your background, your past history interacting with comics as a medium?
Thank you for that, by the way, in the introduction. That was really well done. Listening to that from the outside in, fantastic. Because hearing the last thing that you described as the last point of Saga feels like so long ago to me.
Right.
And I remember that. I don't remember exactly how it all happened. Like you just explained, that was really kind of fun. But I definitely remember you being into that at the time and that kind of starting something. Now looking back on it, when you said that, I was like, oh, wow, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But I'm Justin. I know he gave me an introduction earlier. Phil did. And I thought that was pretty concise, too. I am not as familiar with comics as you are. I guess I would agree with the Sunday Funnies portion. That's a big part of my childhood as well. Calvin and Hobbes, huge part of my childhood and a huge part of my adulthood. As a parent, right. I go back with my daughter and we read those, and it's fun to share that. Always loved a good Far Side, certainly more on the comedic side of things and not really ever any, you know, like Marvel or DC, like you had mentioned, anything that's being consistently printed. I'm definitely kind of on the outside of most of the meta conversations here on comics as a whole, other than kind of just what we've discussed. But more that's, I think, maybe you can back me up on this, that's more in my curiosity about how things work and like what's going on than it is about like a real desire to know comics. Like that's kind of your area of expertise. I guess I'd kind of sum it up like this too. We share a whole lot of similarities in what we like, as far as other medium. And so I tend to agree with you on a lot of different takes and on a lot of different movies, TV, whatever it may be. And when you started getting into comics, it's funny to look back at Saga as kind of the beginning of that. I think you wanted me to read that as well. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get everybody to read it, I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah.
I think I read the first one on that one. It just didn't hook me in the same way that it hooked you. But it looking back on that as kind of that moment is really what's striking me right now, is like that's the genesis of kind of this new interest.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't take that trip with you, and you'd been constantly presenting kind of these really cool stories. I love a great story. I love a cool concept. I love sci-fi, and I like general strangeness. So it checks all those boxes, and I was kind of like, why don't I like this? What am I missing? And I do still sort of feel that disconnect with it.
If you don't mind me jumping in, I've also recommended, and I believe you read through the first trade of East of West,
correct.
Jonathan Hickman and Nick Jurgoda.
Yes.
Very great sci-fi series, sci-fi western. Didn't hit you, I think, in the way that I was hoping for it to, because as we've mentioned before this, I think I was making recommendations based on what I liked rather than what I think you will like. But we'll get into that portion later.
I think I'm just so simple. That, like, right now, as a reader, like, I don't know that the first thing that I would show somebody as a movie watcher is The Godfather. Like, they just would miss a whole lot of what makes that great. Why that shot is relevant or worthwhile. I am that dude. And in a way, it's sort of uncomfortable, and that's kind of, like, what I'm getting at. Like, why am I missing something that I know, for all intents and purposes, I should like? Like, because when you suggest something to me, it's probably good. Every other suggestion in other mediums, I'm pretty into.
Well, and one other that I know you've read is Mouse.
Yeah,
was something that...
Persepolis, I also read that as well.
Did you read both 1 and 2 when she's an adult?
I did not.
Okay, yeah, I have 2 if you want
There's also... What's the one about the Fun Home? Fun Home?
Yep, Fun Home. Fantastic. Alison Bechdel's
Wonderful for me. Yeah. And I do think because it is more grounded in a reality, in a space where I am not making as many guesses. I know what's happened. It's historical in a certain way. And it's just then representing a story to me with some visual aids that accompany it, which I really enjoyed. And I know I'm missing a lot of, like, those fundamentals, the framework on that, why somebody who's into it may also enjoy that or have legitimate criticisms of something like that, that I might am just like, no, I was blown away by that and everything else I haven't enjoyed. Like, and I don't know why. So I'm here to learn about that. That's a big part of it for me, is to kind of try to catch up in a certain way just in that medium. I think it would be good for me. And then to also kind of, I don't know, kind of act as a little bit of a vessel to get that done for both of us.
Which I think kind of leads naturally to what the mission statement of the podcast is going to be overall. Sure. You are going to be that audience surrogate for a newbie, for someone who isn't necessarily initiated
for sure
in a lot of these forms of the medium. But it's once you have a certain vocabulary to digest this medium in a different way, it's going to, I hope, change even an appreciation for what comics can do, even if it isn't something that's a passion of yours or other people. Which is why I think a recurring segment of this podcast is going to be something similar to what we're going to do with a guest. So we're going to break down just what, for someone who isn't initiated into comics, just what it is that they're into. That's a goal of mine with this podcast, is to expose comics to more and more people and to give those who already enjoy comics more of that vocabulary and an understanding of the grammar of the medium and how it works, so that they can also become then the preacher's speed.
Right.
Yeah, preaching the good word. I think that's a big goal of mine, is just
exposure.
Helping understanding, not just even exposure, not just knowing that comics are out there and you can buy them, because people do know that now. Like, a large percent of them don't, but those are the people who probably won't buy them at all. A lot of people know comics are out there and don't buy them. And I think it's because, similar to you, they have exposure to the medium in some point in the past, but they don't, they aren't given this, like, grasp of what it is to enjoy and take out of it.
There's no children's books as an adult. I can't I haven't found very many things that are like Pixar. That's fun for kids and adults. And it's fun for both young people or new watchers and old watchers.
Right.
And there's reasons that they're both appreciating this thing. The kid will have zero appreciation for the 3D graphical art that go and how difficult that is to get done. They have no idea. I might, but I am missing that, Phil. Missing that level of, like, okay, this is how other people have done it, and this is how this person did it. Can you see how that is so drastically different?
Right.
And I am missing those forms.
Right.
Not fundamentally. I know some of them. And that makes my grasp feel tenuous
sometimes. Right. And I think that is, I just remembered, what something that's going to differentiate us from a lot of other comic book podcasts out there, especially ones that have bigger libraries, is they tend to dive more on story arcs, characters, the tapestry that is rich and wonderful to to investigate and deep dive into the histories of these shared universes of these two big companies. That is, those will appear on our show. That is not our show.
Right.
Our show is about how the form has changed, evolved over time, how it functions now, and what it is, how these different milestones that many times do happen in the superhero genre, how they have impacted how the art form and the industry has grown. I want to talk more about the mechanics, the things that have been happening behind the scenes, the machinations that make these things go, rather than a history of how these characters have interacted in the past. Which, while it has its place, it's kind of flooded in the content.
You could lose yourself completely in something like
and
that.
And a lot of different people bringing different takes. I don't even want to hate on those people. It's just not what I want to provide.
Well, it's not an opinion, I think, that is that not so much that you're after. I guess I would classify that as more of an explanation of why. Mm. Why is this working? And that could be an opinionated answer, but like, what is the machination behind this? What's its natural progression? Where did it start? Where did it end? How can you see how these things branched from each other? How they differ? And it's not going to be everybody's cup of not every branch is going to be everybody's cup of tea. And especially as a new person, if you don't have a sign point, a gateway that says, okay, this is where you begin and how to start.
Right.
It becomes this very is your compass, difficult.
So you know,
exactly. Exactly. You are overwhelmed with options upon options that could all be just by happenstance, not right for you, just by pure happenstance and not knowing what to look for. If you don't know what you do like and what it's supposed to be, then you could be getting shit all the time and you'd never know it because you wouldn't know what else is available and you wouldn't have somebody show you the basics to get you to that level. They just throw you into that deep end. Phil, to kind of step back on that mission statement thing too, I honestly see you as somebody who is interested in more than just those stories, in more than just the arcs, and is interested in, I think, exposing people not necessarily to the specific stories or to the specific characters or even necessarily the history, but more about providing the necessary framework for someone to get a more rounded picture, to find what they like, and then to make the journey on their own. Because that's available to you as long as you have a shepherd.
Especially in America, outside of the comic strip page, we look at comics through a superhero lens. So we need to, in a lot of people's brains, separate content from the form.
Yeah, for sure.
Form of comics is just the picture in so many people's minds is full 99% with superheroes.
With Superman.
And Batman. And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, maybe, if they know that's a comic. So you need to change, make them understand that they can like the form if it's filled with different content.
Yeah,
like,
yes.
Separating that is going to be so crucial.
If you watched one TV show and you didn't like it, you did not like all of TV.
Yep.
If you watched 80, you didn't like all of TV.
If you were flipping through the radio station in a really rural town and had listened to a lot of country, you wouldn't go, oh, I don't like music.
Yes. Well, you might.
You might.
You might.
You might.
The problem is that you
might.
But you just don't have a picture enough to know what else is available.
Right.
If this was your first introduction
and once you have that wider frame of reference, I think that, would help a lot of people.
It's helpful in all those mediums. It's just less, there's less of a, at least in my experience, that's another thing, too, I think. Even with someone who was shepherding me, who I trust a lot. Like, I trust your judgment. Still hard. It's still a really difficult thing to do because I feel like in some ways comics lacks those introductory, the middle ground jump from what feels like reading the funnies to what feels like reading graphic novels or feels like it's getting
whatever
out of that.
Whatever level.
Yeah. As an adult who never really got into the nostalgia of superheroes. That was never my thing. So that was never something I was going to go to.
Right,
now.
That wasn't going
to
hit you.
Maybe
right.
For other people it would be. For me, it's not. I was missing some sort of connecting piece
that says,
okay, this is how you do learn about this. And like barring some sort of class on it, it's just hard to do. And I do think kind of that's your goal here in some ways, Phil, is to provide that class.
We're just over 20 minutes in with editing. We'll probably be just over 15.
Sure.
I think that'll work. We can kind of transition. I think this really works perfectly going to my first recommendation. I told you there was only one thing that you actually have to read out of this
What is
pile.
It? Oh, fuck. It's going to hurt.
That goal that you're talking about that I'm trying to get done. Scott McCloud was trying to get back done in 1992 or whatever.
Interesting.
So this is from top to bottom, how to understand comics as an art form. He breaks down their different chapters on, I've talked about like the time in between panels and how that
right.
can be impacted by different things. Have I talked about icons versus realistic photos? Like, there's so many different...
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Right. And he breaks down... He's also done, like, a short history here, which, if you want to get really obtuse, you can say goes back to cave paintings and all that shit.
For sure.
And he does. For but sure. It really breaks down to mm-hmm. how the printing press changed comics and the art form. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he talks about going from really realistic to iconographic.
Right.
Iconographic?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Iconographic. That's how I would say
iconic.
It. Iconic? Yeah. Iconic works,
iconic.
Too. Yep.
So yeah, he talks about going from the more realistic to the more iconic faces, how that is, that impacts the reader's perception, how it's easier to put themselves in the shoes okay. of that person. How abstraction fits into that equation.
I love it. Okay.
All of this shit. It's all about the universal language of comics.
That's
something
genius.
Specifically that I did want to break down. Well, he also breaks down like how they're moment-to-moment, action-to-action, subject to... There's different ways you can juxtapose these pictures
sure.
to give different
sure.
meanings of time. Not just that, but also there's one part in particular I wanted to point out where he's talking about how you have to, in comics, take time and space into account at the same time,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you could, in most cases, it'd be hard to make an educated guess as to the duration of a given sequence, is what he's saying. Mm-hmm. But you can see through this, it's, I always figured Marianne would go for Gilligan. Guy's sitting, I guess. But what happens, how does that change when you have more panels
uh-huh.
as opposed to just more space in between the panels? Or how about just the panel being longer?
Yes.
How much longer are you sitting then ingesting the image? That's the kind of shit he's trying to break down to give you
I love it.
Universally what it is you look for. It's a comic book about how to read and understand comic books.
I love it.
I think it is literally the only thing that I want you to read out of this whole pile.
I can tell you, Phil, this is the first one that I've ever been like, I'm reading that.
Yeah. I don't know why this wasn't the first thing I ever handed to you. As someone,
you think I'm smarter than I am.
Right. We didn't even really get into... We were going to do like a question answer and we're still going to.
Sure.
But this is just undeniably something... This isn't something I would give anyone as even their first comic. You were talking about that. You wouldn't give anyone...
Sure.
You know, the most advanced thing. I wouldn't even necessarily give this to anybody as in their first pile. But you, as someone who doesn't like fiction, who, again, just likes going into the minutia of bullshit that doesn't even really matter a whole lot, you're going
thrilling.
To fucking love this.
I'm
going to
love that.
I really think you're going to like
I
this
agree.
Book a lot. So, yeah, I definitely recommend it to any of our readers as well if you want to check in. It'll probably be a month from now. We'll
What's
check in on whatever Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud.
Okay.
The Invisible Art. Probably a month from now is when we'll want to check in with whatever you've read.
Oh, I don't know. I figure I could probably read this a little quicker.
Yeah, no, that you're definitely going to. That you're definitely going to. And I'm rereading it right now as well. I'm only
Are
like
you?
Four chapters in. Yeah, and I'm just blown away by things that I thought were my original thoughts. I just read a decade ago. Like, oh, Scott McCloud's a genius. He put this so perfectly. Like, I just forgot these words, and he's so much better than
what
it's
a
great.
Beautiful moment to
it
go
really
back
is.
To something that you've. That's the for me a very fundamental feeling of when you've experienced growth and when you understand more.
Right.
When you go back to something and you're like, "That's what that meant." Wow.
Right.
Okay.
And, yeah, and these other light bulbs are hitting. Even
yeah.
as someone who I think a decade in, I understand this shit. That's why I want to provide this resource to people because I think. There are things overlooked. There are so many people who love comics who might even have told their friends they read that and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Or they just straight up won't want to read it because I know everything about it. I know how comics work. I know how to read panel to panel.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about so much more than that.
You're missing the appreciation of the form.
It's about so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how the form
oh,
even
you take
fucking
for granted
works.
All
right.
of the camera work that goes into every single movie and all
so
of
much
the
shit.
Visual
right.
and sound, all of it.
Right.
You don't know. And if you, even if you feel that it feels good and it's well done, do you know why
right.
that's well done? Do you have any
no.
idea why that
no.
works? Not at all. And for the most part, most people are very comfortable with that. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. This is really
yeah.
exciting.
No, that's your actual one piece of homework. I think we're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we're going to do, again, a good discussion on not just favorite stories or franchises that you've enjoyed in the past, but just what it is you enjoy in general, certain genres or tropes in both fiction and nonfiction. So we'll be back with that. So we're back here for more recommendations. We've already kind of touched on understanding comics. But before we go over the rest of them, we wanted to dive into you, Justin Horn. Ugh. And what makes you tick.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to get deep and dirty into that skull, that thick skull of yours. We're going to dig around. So let's talk a little bit about franchises, genres, even certain tropes in storytelling that you've enjoyed before. Yikes. Or even outside in nonfiction, things that have stood out to you that keeps gnawing at you, that brings you back.
Yikes. Not to go back to the understanding comics, but I am thrilled by that. I think it's a really cool idea because I am definitely drawn to the nonfiction end of things. I don't think there's any doubt about that, especially when I'm reading things. I tend to go much more heavily towards nonfiction in some way, and I'm okay with it being a true story. I like that a lot. I even prefer, I think I would say, more grounded stories, even if they're set in crazy worlds. I do feel like the responses need to seem reasonable, as if I were one of them. Like, what would I do presented with these scenarios? What would I be doing? I think that gives kind of the most insight. Sometimes it's difficult for me to imagine myself as something like a superhero because I know that they can't exist or like don't. I've never seen one. But it's not hard for me to imagine a fictional world where shit is shitty. Shit is shitty here. Like, I get that. That's an easy comparison, right? So there's a lot of sci-fi or maybe things like sci-fi, I guess I would say. Like, I liked Huxley and I liked as far as reading, like Fahrenheit 451 quite a bit. There's some fiction books. It's a big fan of Ender's Game. I loved that one.
Yeah, you were a fan of the Ender's series.
That was, and not all of them. I think
I've read
is
none of them, and I probably should at some point.
I
know Ender Scott Card has, you know, his problems, but as far as works of fiction, I haven't read them, and I probably should.
All of the all authors have something, maybe. Not all of them. Certainly some of them probably have lived some squeaky clean lives, but yeah, I don't read it for his moral background. Either way, I'm okay with a lot of crazy, and especially if they're trying to tell me a moral story, if they're trying to make the reader question something real, something that is what would you do, or how do you think this situation should be resolved type of scenario. I really appreciate that it has some sort of interactive aspect to it, in that it is intended in some way, much like nonfiction, to give me a point of data with which to extrapolate from. So it's not always about the story so much as it is about what is it attempting to make me think about. And I appreciate the stories, I think, the most that make me think about the most troubling or most conflicting parts of myself, what I think I would do in those scenarios, or what is the right thing to do if I were given those kinds of powers. And I love that. I enjoy that kind of situation. I know that there's also a lot of comics that do that in interesting ways. Like, I'm saying it right now and thinking that's kind of like superhero-ish in its own way. Like, what do you do with given these powers? What's the moral thing to do? And I know that there are certainly comics, even more mainstream comics, that would deal with a lot of those issues. And I should appreciate that. I should have in some form, and I feel like kind of that's what this is. Hopefully I'll get a better idea.
Yeah, I can tell you as far as any superhero books that I've pulled or regularly kept up with, it's going to be in that vein of like the more character-driven How is it that people would react in these sorts of situations rather than a monster of the week or a villain of the week kind of a thing?
I couldn't imagine Phil Yu as, and I don't. I know that it is. That isn't what you like in other stuff. It's not what you like in your TV. I would imagine that your tastes generally follow.
Right.
Like what? It's not like you're enjoying something so drastically different feeling about comics.
Well, and I say that even as someone who's enjoyed the Marvel movies a good amount. But I really have. I've gotten into...
Oh, I know you have.
And I've admired the way they built a shared universe cinematically. It's very impressive.
They do that really well. But a part of me is concerned that it's just advertisement at work. Like, it's just like, well, yeah, that's how we move the most merch.
Mm.
And I mean...
And it is.
And it is, yeah.
Right, it's
and,
big special effects that you can put up on screen. You can afford to put up on screen.
And it does legitimize in some ways what I think so many of the old attempts to bring these superheroes or comic book characters into the real world, the pseudo-real world, one that we could feel more connected to. It was missing having a visual component that felt more realistic. It is important that Iron Man looks dope in a movie and that he looks like a badass and that the shit that he shoots out of his hands looks awesome. It's important that all of these visual aspects of things like Spider-Man, we can even talk about like the Spider-Man new, the game, all of those qualities that can be delivered, that could be delivered, I didn't think really hit their peak until kind of more recently. And not their peak, but at least a kind of more ecumenical quality to more a wider audience. It is like, it's difficult to discern now sometimes what is being computer generated and what isn't. And that is super helpful when you're dealing with things that don't exist in the real world.
Right.
Not everything has to be practical effects.
Right.
And they don't have to be done stunningly. If you are going the practical effects route, some people do. I mean, it has to be spot on, you know? Like, doesn't have to be, but it really helps to sell that story, that world. This sort of should look like a place that whatever creatures you have inhabit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has done a lot of good work. Those movies have done a lot of good work for introducing that.
I guess let's get back to things that you have enjoyed. What are some of your favorite genres? Let's hit that real quick. If you had to throw them out there,
just in like, just media in general.
Yes.
Okay. I think that it's fairly varied. I guess I'm a sort of basic bitch, sort of for the nonfiction still. In some form, documentaries. Give them here. I watch that all day. I love a documentary. It's just there's something about that I really enjoy. And have, at least for the greater part of my adult life. I also, similarly, really like these big moral stories. That's a big one for me. So trying to present some sort of kind of difficult situation in unique ways and then make the person watching think about that a lot.
So kind of a...
To give you, like, I guess I'm thinking...
Dramas with some sort of ethical or moral dilemmas at play.
Yes. And I guess... To add maybe just an extra layer to that, that it is something that is currently worrisome, I think. It has some layer of this slippery slope-like mentality.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned something that would challenge your own kind of... Is this something...
Yes.
Would I react that same way, and is that okay?
Yes.
Or, yeah, whatever the question might be. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very good touching. So anything... Go ahead, if you have something hitting you.
You know, I was just thinking of a show that did that well, and Game of Thrones does that, did for the better part of their series, did it really well of making you understand that people are people, and that there's not necessarily a good character here. Not really. There's not like, I mean, there sort of is, but there's not like one dude who's just like the pure good guy. Like, and I think they've done a good job of sort of introducing that kind of feeling into many of the more modern adaptations of things like the Marvel movies, of like, presenting maybe that they're not completely good. And that's, I think that's super important because otherwise there's nothing to guess. If you're a superhero and all you do is good, I don't have to question what's going to happen at the end of this thing.
Yep.
You're going to make another one, and he's going to do the good thing.
Yep.
But okay, then I don't... Why even read this? There's no... There's nothing to gain. But similarly, that happens in a lot of movies as well. The plot armor of movies is a cliche that bothers me deeply. Mm-hmm. Please, 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 if you can remove plot armor, do, because that is not how anything works in real life.
Mm-hmm.
It should be... Death should be scary. Like, it is for everyone else. It's about bravery in the face of those things. What are you willing to stand up for? What are you willing to save your own hide for? Like, and sometimes those things are important. If you were calculating the maths here, like, ooh, am I worth it more to be alive and to try to explain this? Or should I die for that conviction? Like... That's a question that that someone should struggle with and think about themselves and what they might do in that scenario. And we all are very, we like to put ourselves in the roles of heroes. And of course, I think that in some ways is a very good thing. Emulating heroes probably has been very beneficial for us throughout our societies. But I do think there is a level of idolization maybe and worship that happens there. And it needs to be humanized as to not give the wrong impression about what power really is.
I think it kind of sums this up perfectly. A show that we haven't mentioned yet, but I haven't watched a lot of, you have, and it seems like you've enjoyed a good amount of, is Black Mirror.
Oh, I fucking love Black Mirror.
There's an episode in particular, what is it, The Million Credit Man or whatever?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I can't remember what the name of that is.
Literally one of my favorite experiences of ingesting a piece of media, because I loved, obviously throughout that whole episode, it's well shot, well acted, it's a good premise, and I, throughout the end of it, we after debated whether or not it was even a good ending. I was insisting that the ending itself was bad, because this very human main character did something very human at the end, with Stripe just full of flaws, just so many things that were in my heart wrong. I didn't want this. I didn't want this character that I just identified with for an hour to do this.
Right.
You can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it took you convincing me that these questions that this episode was drawing into my brain is exactly why it's good. And even if I didn't like it, if it wasn't sitting well with me, that those questions it was posing are exactly why I should say, oh, this is a really good episode.
Yeah, it shouldn't sit well.
It shouldn't.
Those, I think those things are really highly uncomfortable in a lot of ways. And there's a couple, like...
And I don't necessarily think, like, everything has to work that way. But a place for that. Clearly a place for that kind of storytelling.
Yes.
And I think it is... It kind of cracks me up that someone, as someone who isn't necessarily into a lot of fiction, that those are kind of your jams, or the things you don't get a lot. And when you do, they're like little nuggets that you can, you know, kind of hold up and go, oh, look at this shit.
That is funny.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, it's kind of
fun. I do that, though, and you know, I guess I would also say, too, the Black Mirror reference is a good one, because that is, like, really kind of what I'm
kind
after.
Kind of up your alley. Yeah, yeah, that kind of questioning thing. There can be weird high concepts
Concept is irrelevant.
Right.
What is happening and why? What would I do in it? And I do think... this reminded me. Have you seen Saving Private Ryan?
No.
You not definitely all should. The way through. There is a part in that movie, though, where the kind of like the little bitch of the group, it essentially lets a German soldier go. And he's like, dude, everyone else is dead. This guy's begging for his life. This is ridiculous. We shouldn't do this. And you feel for that character in that moment. And you could see why, of course, he would say
that. That decision.
And they did, and they let him go. And then later on in the movie, he kills him, the German soldier. And it's incredibly personal. He stabs him through the chest, and they're looking at each other. And he recognizes who this man is, and they recognize each other. As he's about to put, and now the guy who let him go, Upham, is begging for his life. Please. Yeah, please, you know who I am. I let you go. And he just, the German soldier's just crying and shaking his head, and he pushes it, that knife slowly.
Does indeed.
And it's brutal. But that's, that wasn't necessarily the right choice.
Yeah.
Just because it felt empathetic doesn't always make these things right. There are consequences for actions that even feel like the right thing to be doing. They feel like that. And that could have ended in that moment and still been a beautiful moment where he let him go. That would have still been poignant, would have still had a lot of impact. Some, certainly, that, wow, amongst all this awful shit, that there's
some humanity, yep, blah, blah,
yes,
blah.
And it still delivered that point, mm-hmm, no matter what.
Right.
And then it comes back to kick you in the teeth. And that's almost more beautiful because it's like the moments where they're recognizing each other, the moments where you can clearly tell the German guy doesn't really want to do this. He's not comfortable with this, what he's doing. Because he knows who this guy is. And that's the kind of question, like, what would you do? We all think it would be so easy to be up him. We all think it would be so easy. We all want to be that. And then when you are that, are you sure you're making the right choices? And then when you're making those choices, what happens to you after? Like, I do feel like there's, like, no ramifications sometimes for actions in a lot of media. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate seeing. Sometimes people do shitty things. I don't like seeing that. I'd prefer to see the humanity, but you can't just get rid of it. You can't just pretend like, well, you could, but there's a place, mm-hmm, to examine what just happened here and what both parties must feel like.
Right.
And what it must be like to be both of them. And if the point that someone's getting out of this is shouldn't have let him go, you're missing the huge point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right, if that's the only thing that you're taking.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot more to analyze here.
Your thinking is so far off.
Right.
Like, what would it be if that was you? Mm. What would it be if you were on the other side of that equation? Wouldn't you have begged for your life, taken it? Wouldn't you have tried to... You could see why someone would do such a thing. Presenting a world in where the character's actions are at least consistent with the presentation of who they've been,
mm-hmm,
is so much more important to me than the delivery of a happy ending or some,
gotcha,
kind of arbitrary spot like that. Yeah. I would say I kind of like downer shit, but it does also... Black Mirror takes a toll on me. I only can watch a couple of those at a time.
Right, exactly.
So did Game of Thrones took its toll on me. Like, mm-hmm, emotionally, that's a hard thing to kind of deal with
a lot to fucking digest.
Yeah, there's, and it's not like, oh, I'm so sad for these characters. They're characters. But it's like, that's all very real possibilities. These are all very real.
Yeah, the dynamics at play here are analogous, mm-hmm, to shit in real life.
Yeah, sometimes Oberyn, right, Martell gets his eyes smashed in. And that's terrible, but that's... Life sucks sometimes. Mm. Like, I liked him, but he died. Yeah, that's right. The world. I prefer that over anything saccharine, certainly.
Hmm.
I will say I'm also really big into, this sounds weird, in conjunction with, I love comedy. Absolutely love comedy. But I separate those two things kind of a lot in my mind. Comedy is its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I enjoy that. And I don't tend to... I like my drama heavy and I like my comedy heavy. Mm-hmm. I don't really care for, like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of the elevator music of comedy.
Right.
I don't want that. And I certainly don't want the elevator music of drama. Like, ugh. Like, I couldn't stand that. It has to have some heavy value to me in some way. It's either got to really make me feel good or make me feel kind of not so good.
Mm.
Bad, you might say. Make me feel bad.
Then I'm interested to shift into how this is going to go then. So I have kind of a few categories here.
Ooh.
The first two are nonfiction. Well, at least they're based on true stories, clearly.
Right.
Have you already read, yep, all parts of March?
I read book one.
You read book one. Okay, yes. I'm going to get you book two or
so
three.
Great. I forgot I read that.
Have you read all of March?
I read the book one.
Okay. So, oh, you're saying you forgot you read this.
Yes.
I thought you said, oh, no, I read that too. Forgot I read that. Okay, my bad.
No, sorry.
So I will get you, the next... what did you think of March?
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Again, a non-fictional interpretation of obviously very... dramatic events, so to speak. But from a perspective, I think that would be good with a young daughter to kind of go over. I think she's at the right age to be reading like a March
and getting
some perspective on that.
Here's a question maybe I'm going to pose back at you.
Mm-hmm.
As we're going over these, I'm sort of realizing that even though I would say, yes, I've enjoyed quite greatly a large number of these nonfiction mm-hmm. books, I had trouble remembering them when we were talking about it. I wonder why that is. I wonder why I can't, or why I'm not that I can't, but why I'm not going, oh, yes, I definitely read this, and I definitely read that, and I can recall the titles. Why isn't it sticking in here? Some of them sort of do.
Hmm.
Some of them, maybe, I don't know if it's just because it's been kind of near my eyesight, Persepolis, just because it's close to my bed.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, and where were you drawing it from?
A lot.
Next up, I had Andre the Giant. So this is a biography of the man by Box Brown is the cartoonist on this. I really liked it because it has a good amount of comedy. Comedy's actually really hard to get across in comics.
I can imagine.
Because it's all about timing. And the reader has all the control over that kind of shit. But he has really great, simple cartooning. Very simple layouts that I think are easy to follow, yet still varied enough that you'll start to flex a little bit of the muscles. Especially, again, the plan is for you to read that first. This whole stack, I would read it in the order even I'm going over, because I know you'll like that. Pretty sure you'll like this, and you'll read it in like an hour. It's cool. Nothing. It's just cute cartooning and really awesome little anecdotes from his life that I hadn't heard before, okay, but illustrated in a wonderful way.
That's interesting.
Next up.
That's thick, buddy.
Yeah. One again, it...
Nope.
It reads easier... It's Jimmy Corgan, the smartest kid on earth.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned this one. So this is, and actually, I think Anne got this one.
Anne got this, yes. Anne is my sister and Justin's wife. Uh-huh. You looked this up. What about it?
Oh, I looked it up when we were looking up what to get you.
Yeah, what things to get me.
I was fascinated by this.
Fascinated. Is right up your alley.
It looks so cool.
This and Building Stories I've gotten now.
The Building Stories looked amazing.
Because you can just read it. Conceptually,
form-wise, I can tell that's beautiful.
This is step one, especially mm-hmm. after that, because there are certain times where he kind of gets more experimental with his panel layouts. But even then, gives you directions at times to help you make sure that you're ingesting it in the right order.
That's helpful.
But sometimes you don't need to. Like, he's already playing with that, because that's what he goes into. Yeah, so
mm-hmm.
You'll mm-hmm. love that, too.
Oh, no,
I really think you'll love that.
It felt like a Christopher Nolan comic.
Mm,
like,
right?
I was like, oh, you're playing with time. I'm cool. Play with the dimensions of shit? Fuck yes.
Right.
Fuck that shit up. Put your movie on a Mobius strip, motherfucker.
Especially with, like, Building Stories. He does get a lot more into that, but you'll dig that a lot.
Saw that one, too. That
Here's
one
the wild card. Flintstones, from when the Hanna-Barbera universe came back to DC. This is Mark Russell is the best satire writer in comics. I have about 90% of everything this guy's written.
Wow.
Because I love him.
Wow.
This through this story, you will. It is to modern day. This was released, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. It is to the modern day what Flintstones was to the 60s. It is a representation of what our society actually is,
mm-hmm.
but through the lens of how that kind of a show would view it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Fred and Barney go to their old, it's like a support group for people who were in this war. Fred committed war crimes, but they joke about it in a, like, I kind of don't want to say too much about this.
Yeah, no, okay.
Very weird and satirical. It's, you will love or hate this book.
I have a question.
Yes.
This is interesting to me,
mm-hmm.
because, I mean, obviously, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's all contained right here.
Oh, is it?
Yes, all 12 issues right
Okay, here. That's good to know, too.
Mm-hmm.
How familiar with the original do you think a person would have to be?
Not.
At all?
No.
So you think I could pick that up?
Yes.
Ooh, wow. Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
Because it isn't about who the Flintstones were. It sets up a new Flintstones.
Okay.
They this was one of the reasons they stopped making Hanna-Barbera comics at DC, because someone at AT&T is who owns DC Comics right now.
Really?
Yeah, and wow. some higher up found out that they were fucking with Hanna-Barbera classics. Like, you're having Fred do what?
That sounds great.
It's really good.
Okay.
You will at some point deeply, deeply empathize with a bowling ball and a vacuum cleaner.
Okay. Okay.
Because, I mean, you know, Flintstones, all of their appliances are animals.
Yes.
You're familiar with that joke?
Yes.
You will
and
cry.
And they made
you
the...
will cry for a bowling ball.
Okay.
I would.
Yeah, I mean, use a bitch, but I might.
Now, this is at the very end. Something
worry.
That
don't you,
you
worry, baby.
Do you already have both of these? This is perfect, and I can bring them home, whatever. But I have here the 10th anniversary book of Calvin and Hobbes, and just a random Far Side.
I love those.
Doesn't matter on the Far Side. I picked this Calvin and Hobbes because Bill Watterson talks about, like, publishing through the years. Like, this is a curated Bill Watterson selection. So, legit, if you do not have this, I will lend it to you. Because it has, that's kind of why I want to lend it to you, is I want you to read this after everything else. The reason I picked this specific Calvin and Hobbes is because of that foreword and all of the notes throughout. Yeah, for sure.
Because I may have, I'm almost positive I have this one.
And even if you don't, I can lend it to you, obviously. I have it right here. I'll leave it either way. But I think it would be interesting, especially after reading Understanding Comics, kind of getting your feet wet in some other things that you haven't read before. At the end of that, going back and reading through Calvin and Hobbes and see how it might impact. Like, for example, if you don't mind me...
Not at all.
...making a quick...
Of course.
Because it just so happens to be an easy page number to remember. In relation to, we were talking about in that Understanding Comics how just the even the size of the panel might change how it is that you're perceiving something that's mm-hmm. going on. Mm-hmm. I think it was right after. So like an example of Calvin waiting out in the rain, like how long is that moment? How mm-hmm. cold does that feel? Mm-hmm. Like you can...
There's
so many things going on, like in the shapes of mm-hmm. the how harsh that rain is. Mm-hmm. Like there's just so much being communicated that you don't even notice your brain's doing for you. It's so good.
Done right, you don't know that it's happening.
When it's done right, you don't even know what's going on. You're just reading.
This also reminded me, Phil, you know what? It's actually really interesting that you brought this up particularly, because I am extremely familiar with the shape consistency of these panels constantly.
Yes.
So when it does change to a two panel, it's noticeable. And mm-hmm. it does provide some sort of other notification to just make note.
Because
that
you have this base that you're used to, this mm-hmm. set up punchline of a mm-hmm. 3-4 panel gag, that it's when it changes, it is going to stick out more to you.
I wonder, Phil, if I'm, you know, in a lot of ways too, I think this is probably something that we discussed at least a little bit previously. But I think I'm going to come up with a new word for sort of what I'm missing. Not just the fundamentals, but the subtleties of those things.
Mm. What Scott McCloud says is it's both the vocabulary and the grammar of comics.
Yeah,
it is.
That's every new learning tradition when you are trying to start out on something. There are groups of people who are trying to explain it to you with their grammar and the vocab they're using.
Yeah, of something that they're already well familiar mm-hmm. with, so you need some way to kind of break down that barrier. I think that's going to kind of wrap it up. Unless we do anything in post, you'll hear some obviously edited over audio where we have to patch out me talking about my...
What did you...
I don't know why I had to take it there. Outside of that, did you have anything else you wanted to leave us off on this last episode? Anything that stands out to you in your recommendations here?
Or
how you're feeling in general?
I'm excited to kind of just go on this journey with you, Phil. Like, in a lot of ways, I do sort of want to be a vessel for your enjoyment, regardless of whether or not it's something that I'm going to take with me forever. Regardless, I want to make sure that that you feel, well, not make sure, fuck, I don't know, but like...
Disco Stew wants me to be comfortable.
Yeah, dog, while I do my thing. but no, I mean that in a lot of ways. Like, I think there's a lot that I could learn. There's a lot that I will pick up and enjoy just story-wise, just from reading all these things. I love to get new information, and I will love to have the discussion with you, regardless of whether or not I think it's... Mm. If we align on that principle or whatever it is, I'm excited for that. And I hope that I can in some ways provide some sort of reasonable enough discussion that, you know, you enjoy that as well, that you can keep enjoying that and finding and kind of refining what I think.
Stimulating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Stimulate. No, but refine what you are already, minded towards, I think.
Right.
Which is kind of in introducing these things to people. Right when you picked up Saga, mm-hmm. I don't find that as a coincidental.
Right.
That you, right then, like at the beginning of the rebirth, we'll call it,
mm-hmm.
you were trying to do it back then too. Like, hey, right. you guys should check this out. It's really worth your time. Like, that's still you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just something had clicked there that I want to help make click for other people. So hopefully we can make that a thing.
It's got, I don't think there's any way that, because we do share a lot of vocab and we do share a lot of, like, media similarities, I think it's going to be much easier for me, hopefully for you, also moving forward with a kind of already base understanding of who we are, so that it's easier to make those connections and make those descriptions that are outside of being self-referential with the lingo. Like, it needs to have an example out almost outside of itself. So I think that hopefully we'll be able to do some of that for people, because I do think that's been helpful for me. One other thing that I was thinking, it already has been tremendously helpful for me. I haven't really given enough credit to that. But we have had previous discussions. I don't know about quite like this, but kind of in some ways less structured, certainly, right. But definitely talked about it. And when I'm reading those things, I can tell that the more I've introduced it and the more that I've learned from you, the better off I am at understanding what's being delivered. Like, I know that without a doubt. I'm more comfortable in saying what I do and don't like now than I was back then, most definitely. And I think you're getting better at making suggestions, because it's funny to me that you also have made suggestions to things that I've read and liked.
Mm.
Like the March thing, it's like, oh no, March. He does know.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, I just forget that I've seen that. Like, you get it, and I did like it, and I liked all those other ones too. Like, I like that shit. So I think with just a little time, discussion, we'll probably come up with a pretty decent run of things here where we can...
And again, in time, have this be a recurring thing, convert more people to the fold.
That's what I'm hoping for, too.
Right. I don't know how often, but I mean, I got family members I can yank into a room and sit them in front of a microphone, so I can do this for months and months if we do it on a monthly, you know, whatever.
Oh, sure.
Also, we didn't really speak too much here, but we're mostly going to be focused, at least early on Western comics, on American comics in particular.
Makes sense.
There is quite a contingent in Europe and Japan, obviously, of people who love sequential art and comics, whatever they call them in their country.
Mm-hmm.
And even in Understanding Comics, he gets a bit more into the breakdown of East versus West in the moment-by-moment panels versus the unconnected sequence that's setting a mood kind of panels. Mm-hmm. Like, Eastern artists tend to spend more time setting mood, which is why something... Selfishly, I want to learn more about manga, just because it's like a blind spot. But I also, having that conversation with you about that personal connection, I realized that manga might be a route for me to find more material that you might like a lot, because they take more of that time to set up connections and characters. It's just so much of what we think of as manga is like this over-the-top, crazy bullshit Dragon Ball Z, Naruto, there are a whole bunch of things that are more like Junji Ito horror kind of shit.
That's which I also have read and I never brought up, but I've read a decent amount of that as well, like multiple stories of his.
Really good shit.
That fucking, there was that Super Eye Patch Wolf video where he was talking about, it's a manga where they fucking, it's the mom who fucking pushes her nephew off the fucking.
Yes.
That is what I'm after.
Fucks with me. That's I want to read that really bad.
That, to me, a million times more terrifying than any monster you could ever create.
Yep.
That's a person who is out there.
That could happen.
Not yet. That's
is happening.
Somebody did that.
Somebody did that.
Somebody did some shit worse than that, right. And then their kids had to just watch them.
Right.
What the fuck?
Awful. So, but yeah, I'm kind of on the journey for that kind of shit, too.
I'd love to.
I'm realizing how much I do enjoy that kind of content as well. Like you said, in small doses. Yeah, I can take at a time.
I'm a little baby.
All right, we're going to leave the conversation there. Again, like we said at the beginning, if you want to give us any feedback, our email address is thecomicwonk@gmail.com. And if you're so inclined to support us monetarily, we have a Patreon. It is patreon.com/thecomicwonk. Both of those links should be in the show notes as well. Come back next week where we'll be exploring the state of the union currently for comics and how it is folks can get initiated when they don't know where to start. Thanks for listening.